I'm Frank Garza, and welcome to Here and Abroad, a podcast that follows the U.S. men's national team and their player pool across Europe, MLS, or wherever else they play their club football. For the third consecutive time, the USMNT has won the CONCACAF Nations League. After squeaking by Jamaica in the semifinal, they beat Mexico 2-0 in the final on Sunday night. On today's show, we're going to break down the USMNT's performance across the two matches and discuss what's next for the team. To help me with that, I've invited Mike Woitala to join the show. Mike is the executive editor of Soccer America. Mike, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So, Mike, my understanding is that you've been covering the team in Arlington in the Dallas area ever since the semifinal. Is that right?
Yeah, I've been here since they started the game. We had the game on Thursday, which was against Jamaica. And so it's at Cowboys Stadium or AT&T Stadium or Jerry World or Dallas Stadium. Dallas Stadium is what they're going to call it during the World Cup. But anyway, you know, a tremendous building. It's an indoor, just a gigantic stadium. So the U.S. plays Jamaica, and there's pretty much no one there. They're playing the first game of the doubleheader with Mexico. And that was just, you know, it's kind of odd because you're thinking about how far the U.S. national team's come. And, in retrospect, how well they've been playing after they beat Mexico. And there's really no one at the stadium for their game against Jamaica, which I think was maybe they didn't know the game started, which is why they gave up a goal in the first minute. But when the Mexican fans finally started arriving, the early arrivals came when the U.S. game was ending. And so the loudest noise for the U.S. national team in the semifinal was being jeered by the Mexican fans. And as you and your listeners probably know, the U.S. came back after a miserable regulation time and won that 3-1 to meet Mexico in the final.
Yeah, they did seem to salvage themselves, they definitely salvaged themselves with their performance against Mexico last night. But, I guess I want to start by just hearing what your key takeaways are from this, this two-match window here. As you watch this team and their performance, what was your biggest takeaway for the USMNT?
Probably that the U.S. is better than Mexico in every facet of the game of soccer right now. Mexico just did not play well. The U.S. played well tactically and like I said, whether it was defensively, even skill level and passing, certainly defending. I'm still trying to figure out what went wrong with Mexico, because if you look back over the decades, they've had some excellent teams, and it really is stunning to see that they are such a weak team right now. And for the U.S., they've got to be very happy with winning a title like that. And while I was watching the first, the regulation time of against Jamaica, there were a lot of issues there. It was a miserable performance. It really was. And then it took an own goal in stoppage time for them to go into overtime. So, two of my takeaways would be, how good they are at playing against certain teams and how they struggle if they play a team where the U.S. has to really initiate and create and innovate and figure out how to get past, 10 players who are just playing defense.
Yeah, that continues to be a talking point, for this team. And it's important for them to kind of get that figured out, because as we look ahead to the Copa, or well, definitely the Copa America this summer, but I'm thinking more longer term in the World Cup, with it being an expanded field, they're definitely going to play teams that sit in that low block against them. And some of those might be must-win games, either later in the group stage or maybe a knockout round opponent. And so, yeah, that's kind of a troubling trend, but they did seem to come back. And to your point about them just being a better team than Mexico, I thought the same thing. I mean, it wasn't that Mexico played like a bad game, or when I think back to that last Nations League in the semifinal where they kind of like fell apart at the end, there wasn't any of that. This just looked like a U.S. team that had more quality and better players than the Mexican team.
Yeah, absolutely. If I look back on the U.S.-Mexico rivalry, the U.S. Consistent success over Mexico at home, started quite a while ago. But very often they'd be games where Mexico would dominate and be the better team, and the U.S. would get goals on corner kicks. Or, I think Mexico kind of had a complex about, they talk about them having a home field advantage. And again, at the final, it was 60,000 fans, and I would guess that it was 80% pro-Mexico, if not more. You know, I asked some of the players afterward, you know, about those crowds, and, you know, the response was they'd rather play in a full stadium being cheered against than what happened against Jamaica and play in a virtually empty stadium. But the game last night, the game in Las Vegas, and the home USA-Mexico game in World Cup qualifying were three games in which the U.S. dominated, you know, and won in a different way than they had in the past. And I think that's one of those sort of like benchmark kind of milestone, whatever you want to call it, of U.S. national team progress. The issue against Jamaica, I speculate, is because the U.S. players are playing with, you know, with strong clubs, with, you're talking Serie A, La Liga, with teammates with incredible skill. And I think in those games, much of what they do is just going so fast and they're reacting, and the passers are coming right to their feet. And I think it was a big difference for them to be in a game where they got the ball at their feet and they've got decisions to make, and they came up empty on what the best way to do. It was also, you know, people talked, there was some talk about the grass being an issue, but I also thought that the way they were passing, you know, they were passing the ball around patiently, and I get that, but it also looked slow. You know, it didn't look crisp, much improved against Mexico for sure. So I think that's kind of the next step. Is Gio Reyna was obviously the star of the show, and that was because he's a player who can play in tight spaces, who can thread a pass when it looks like it's too crowded to do that. And the question for me is, we shouldn't just have one of those players like that who can really make a difference in a game with creativity, innovation, and the skill to, you know, play under pressure with in a crowd like that. Not to take anything away from the other good performances, but, you know, that is an important quality that we still don't have enough of, I think.
So speaking of player performances, that's kind of where I want to go next and talk about some of the players that maybe had really strong individual performances and those that didn't. When you think about the players that played, you know, across these two games, who's somebody that you would give a grade of an A to?
Well, certainly Gio. I think that Christian Pulisic had an interesting final four, in the sense that he wasn't at the top of his game. You know, there were some shots that he didn't, you know, quite get the power on he needed or the accuracy. And but he's a player where you really think, okay, he's going to make something happen. And that was the case against Mexico on the second goal, where he had this brilliant touch over Antuna, I believe it was, near the corner flag, and then jumped over his sliding tackle and did the smart thing, which I'm a big advocate of, is drive your balls from the wing and low and hard instead of high, because those are harder to deal with. And sure enough, you get the goal on that. You know, Tyler Adams is back, and with limited playing time, besides, I mean, that goal that he scored at the end of the first half was just incredible. And I do believe that, you know, he showed in his short time on the field why he would get so much praise, and just being positionally so smart and with him on the field, I think it really helps the attacking players. Weston McKennie, I find him an interesting player. Because sometimes you see him where he's trying to do everything and against weaker teams that works. And then you wonder, well, you know, should Weston McKennie, is he the kind of player we want as a playmaker? I think the thing about him was that he's matured, and he obviously, you know, with his club, he's playing very well at Juventus. And what he did at the final that I thought was worth noting is, you know, he gets an early yellow card, a stupid foul. And then he played the rest of the game disciplined and defensively, and he's good enough to play, you know, to defend without fouling. I think a couple of years ago, I thought that was going to be a liability for him, and it isn't anymore. You know, those are the names that come off the top of my head. Obviously, Haji Wright scored two goals against Jamaica, struggled a little bit against Mexico, The center forward situation is kind of interesting, but certainly it certainly deserved to be called in, which was only after Josh Sargent got hurt. We hadn't seen him since the World Cup. And the player that I feel a little bad for is Ricardo Pepi, because he came in late in the first game, didn't have much luck, didn't get to play. So it is a good situation. And I don't think I recall a time in the U.S. national team history where picking a center forward was difficult because they were all, scoring for their clubs.
Yeah, and I want to dig into this center forward conversation a little bit later, because that got even more interesting than it already was, I think, with these Nations League, matches. To your point about Christian Pulisic, I agree. While it might not have been the most productive window for him in terms of like goals, assists, he looked active to me, even in the Jamaica game. He wasn't one of the players I thought that was low energy, he looked like he was trying to make something happen. He looked active out there to me. I don't think he was lacking any type of like energy effort at all. I mean, he looked like he was working hard out there. Tyler Adams, I have to say, I was dead wrong about Tyler Adams. I had a pregame show for the Nations League finals, and I was saying, why did they bring him in? I was like, I don't want him to play because, like, not because of his quality, but because I was like, I don't want him to get hurt. And he showed how important. I mean, he was a very important player in this window in terms of like just the energy he brought to the team, the leadership, and then of course that goal, which, that match would have been a lot different last night heading into halftime if he hadn't have put us up, 1-0.
Well, that's, the one thing about this tournament is, I don't know if you want to call it luck or good fortune or good timing, but a lot of teams in the past, whether it's a Germany winning a World Cup, they'll have like a miserable game in the early rounds where, they almost get eliminated, and then they come out and they win it. And it almost, is Berhalter lucky? If so, that's great, because they get an own goal to stay alive and then get to the final. And I'm sure that Berhalter felt when they got through that semifinal, they're going to do much better against Mexico. I think he knew that that would be a game where they would be able to play better once it opened up. And he talked a lot about how patient the team was against Jamaica, which was true, although, you can call it patience or being ineffective, whatever. But in the first half against Mexico, they certainly were playing patiently and a little bit frustratingly so, but I do believe that was the tactic. And because they got the goal, it worked out perfectly. It was not a fun first half to watch. There were, very few chances. But it did remind me of a concern I had when Berhalter became the coach. And, you had the Dutch guys and the Belgian guys, and they were all talking about a U.S. style and how everybody was going to play that, whether it was men or women, U-17. And when you ask them what the style was, it was about, playing fast, winning the ball as fast as you can, getting to the goal as fast as you can, everything was about speed and fast. So whatever Dutch school was in vogue at the time. And that concerned me, because I don't think that's how soccer is successfully played. I think successful teams play with a rhythm and they slow the ball down when it's necessary and effective. And they find their rhythm. And I think they did that. And they have talked about, we will adjust our style. And what they did is they came out against Mexico and they were like, extremely patient, the passing the ball around the back and looking for spots and not rushing it. And then in the second half, when Mexico had to open up, they went quick. They struck fast. Like, say, Gio Reyna, for example, played deep in the first half, which worked out kind of well as far as, him being able to distribute and stuff and not being right in the middle of, any kind of chaotic mess in the beginning. And then the second half, he flies down the field, gets fouled for a yellow card foul, takes a free kick with Pulisic, and then a couple seconds later scores. So I think that is, I think it's encouraging that they seem to be flexible on how they're going to, how they're going to play. Again, I think you mentioned the big tests that are coming up, and that's going to be a next step. Certainly, if they hadn't won this, it would have been more concerning.
Yeah, would have been a lot different conversation today. If they had not been able to, squeak by Jamaica at the end there. Let's talk about some players that maybe didn't have such a great performance. You know, we talked about who we would give, you know, an A to. In terms of, you know, player grades, who's somebody that you would give a grade of D or lower to?
You know, I thought Matt Turner should have stopped the goal against Jamaica. He got both hands on it, and he looked like he was off balance when he shouldn't have been. You know, he wasn't tested against Mexico. He punched a free kick. The crosses he took care of were the ones that a goalie should take care of. It wasn't like it was something that was beyond that. You know, the fact that he's not playing at Nottingham, I think, is a concern. You know, it ended all as well. It is well, I suppose. You know, Tim Ream was an interesting choice. You know, we know he's 36. We know he's a very smart player. You know, generally he's a good passer. I thought he did well against Mexico. I mean, Mexico, it was unbelievable how many balls they sent in the air. Ochoa was banging balls downfield. Ream and Chris Richards won them all. They won all, you know, they were hitting high ball. If I'm a coach of a team playing in the U.S. and the two central defenders are starters in the English Premier League, I think that would tip me off that the high balls in the middle are probably not going to be super effective. You know? And I think that Tim Ream, if he's got Chris Richards with him, can manage quite well because they work well together. They're slightly different types of players. So I didn't bring him up because I was going to criticize him. I think he's an important player. But central defense is going to be an issue. Even though I think both those are good players. You look at the Olympic team, the U23s, and you see that they have an issue at central defense. You know, that's where they're talking about using an overage player at that position. You know, Dest had a good game offensively. Anthony Robinson, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, he's always, for me, been a little bit of a tricky player because, he's active and he contributes, but sometimes he's not that consistent. I mean, I don't think he's a very good crosser or a very good passer once he gets down there, but, you know, I don't know if he's going to be a guy we're going to see at the World Cup. But, I mean, what do you think about about Robinson?
I thought he had a solid match. I mean, he's had some really great matches for the U.S. MNT. I think about the last couple of windows where he was almost the best player, of the window, and he's a consistent starter, with Fulham. This Nations League, these two Nations League matches, I thought he put in a solid performance. I mean, he almost had a penalty called against him in the box. Unfortunately, that was like overturned, due to VAR, but that was kind of a risky kind of decision he made there. So he's someone that I would probably give for these two matches, I would probably give like a B, a solid B. Went out there and kind of did what I expected him to.
The important thing about him, like Dest, is he can dribble past people, which is, has always historically been an issue with the U.S. of having lacking players to do that. And it was a big difference that Destin and Robinson could get the ball downfield or upfield, by getting past the player. If we're talking about players that I would have graded low, it would have been Tillman. I thought Tillman didn't have a good game at all. He had the best chance that he blew. His body language he was the only player out there who had the real negative body language. I don't think he really offers anything special out there. I think he probably would have been the one that came out of this tournament the worst. Joe Scally had the misfortune of losing his marker on the Jamaica goal. There were two players there, so some are saying, well, somebody should have marked one of those. As the name Tim Weah came up, which, I always think about, can you blame a forward for a goal? But I guess maybe that's a modern game. I think Scally struggled a little bit because of the different role he would have with the U.S. national team. When he's playing for Borussia Mönchengladbach, he wouldn't have been in so many situations where he has so much time on the ball and he's got to come up with something where with Gladbach, he defends well, he covers a lot of space, and he just basically has to make the simple distribution. And he's had a good Bundesliga game, and he wasn't quite able to create what the U.S. needed against Jamaica when it was so crowded. You're going to depend on a defender who's going to get the ball a lot. That didn't say, I mean, that's not to say it was horrible. I think Yunus Musa was disappointing only in that he didn't make any mistakes, but he didn't take any risks, you know, he started against Jamaica. And if there's no one, you know, if the other team's really not attacking, then I think Musa should have been more involved in the U.S. attack. So, you know, a tough game, obviously, to sort of rate anybody, because it was such a bad game or bad regulation time situation. But as far as players that didn't, you know, really come out on the plus side, I would have to say Musa may have been among that. But, you know, we know Musa's a pretty incredible player. You know, what is he, 21? You know, he's getting decent time in the Serie A. You know, he's a skillful player with great athleticism. So, you know, the fact that the team is still relatively young is always something that's, you know, reassuring.
Yeah, I think, you know, this was a huge opportunity for Malik Tillman. You know, you mentioned him there to be able to get, this is definitely the biggest game, biggest match he's ever started, you know, for the U.S. And, you know, while you could argue, was he good or bad? He certainly didn't just take hold of the opportunity, you know, and kind of run with it and make you think, okay, he's going to get another opportunity like that, you know, anytime soon. I still think he's a good player with lots of like upside. He's having a great season at PSV. He seems to miss a lot of opportunities. Like he's always in a good position. He gets a lot of opportunities in front of goal. But even when I watch his matches at PSV, he misses a lot of them, you know. Yeah. And so I think he'll improve on his finishing, you know. But he definitely didn't seize the opportunity that he had, you know, with that start against Jamaica. Well, one position I definitely want to discuss in more detail is the striker position, that central forward position. For me, these two matches kind of blew up my perception of where that position was. I really thought that Balogun and Pepe, those two were kind of way above, you know, everybody else. Even though Sargent and Haji Wright have been playing so well at club level, I still thought they had kind of an edge. But you know, we have these two matches where Haji Wright is one of the heroes of that Jamaica match with his two goals. And then Balogun doesn't start, I believe, for the first time against Mexico. Ricardo Pepi doesn't even play. I'm so used to him coming on in the second half as kind of like one of those de facto like substitutions you're always going to see. And now I'm thinking, wow, it seems like this central forward position opened up quite a bit after these last two matches. I mean, do you agree, or where do you see that position battle now?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it was great to see Haji Wright. It was disappointing that Josh Sargent, you know, got injured right before the camp. I've really admired Josh Sargent since he's been a, you know, youth player, because of just his knack for scoring. You know, that was always my favorite type of player, you know, like Gerrit Müller, or, you know, just goals of all different kinds, whether it's jumping on a rebound or striking a great ball. I think he has that innate knack for scoring. You know, certainly Haji Wright. I think Pepe is the player that is in such a tough position, but I think what could likely happen is that he'll go to the Olympics with the U23s, and that would give him a chance to start, and, you know, the action he deserves, and the sort of, like, you know, opportunity for glory. You know, Ernie Stewart is the director over at PSV, so that might help facilitate the availability, since the Olympics aren't a FIFA official, they're not on the calendar. I definitely think Pepe is going to always be, you know, the fact that he scores coming off the bench with so few opportunities, you know, with so little playing time. I do think he deserves a start, though. I mean, you know, it's always crazy when you think about, I mean, even when I was like playing as a kid and stuff, and you see coaches who would have a guy come in late and score, and the coach would like take credit for, oh yeah, this guy's a super sub, I bring him in. I go, well, what about if you played him from the beginning? You know, maybe would have scored even more. I mean, obviously there's different factors in there, but, and I don't know what the, you know, as far as flow goes, you know, he hasn't had great form. He's kind of had a weird roller coaster season, right? Like he has a good game where he scores and misses a penalty. He certainly hasn't replicated what he did at Rams at Monaco. You know, that's normal, right? That a player would have a little bit of a roller coaster, especially young players, center forward. Are we missing anybody there?
Well, you know, there's Brandon Vasquez in the conversation too.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think what happened with the Nations League is that, you know, Berhalter was so focused on winning it, and it was the group that he was most comfortable with. And because you would have thought that bringing in Vasquez or Zendejas, who are doing well in Mexican Liga, would have made sense because they would have had less travel, you know, used to Mexican play. Obviously, no need to second guess at this point because they won it. But I definitely would keep an eye on those players.
Well, let's look ahead now to, you know, what's next for this U.S. men's national team. So the next FIFA international window isn't until June. That's the next time this team is going to get together. They have a June 8th friendly against Colombia, and then a few days later on June 12th, they have a friendly against Brazil. And then June 23rd is the Copa America opener against Bolivia. So we have now, what is that, 3 months now to kind of watch this player pool. What are some of the things you're going to be keeping your eye on regarding this U.S. men's national team player pool over the next 3 months?
I think it would be, you know, players that aren't part of this core right now, and also who's, you know, I mean, that's probably the wrong thing to say because I'm sure that's what that's the plan, and it kind of makes sense to have this type of consistency. You know, when it comes to Berhalter, you know, he passed a big test because this was a tournament where it was all, you know, it wasn't like he was building up for something in the future with young players. He had a group that, by his own admission, you know, was on top of its game. Hard to find an era, time in the U.S. national team history where you had so many players doing well for their clubs in Europe. And they had to win that tournament, and they did. So that was a positive. So, I mean, that's a good question. I suppose that De Reyna, I guess Gio proved that he can perform for the national team when he's not getting playing time. I think we go back to the center forwards because, you know, you're going to have a limited roster. Who are you going to put on that, you know, and then at central defense. So, right. So we had Bream and Richards in the final, and Miles Robinson played alongside Richards. And you might help me, you can help remind me of who else would be playing there if they needed someone. And I believe, you know, Mark.
At center back, Cameron Carter-Vickers.
Yeah, Mark McKenzie, right, who was in camp, I believe, but he's been playing well at Belgium. If I was on the staff, I think I would take a very close look at that depth chart, you know, and sort of, and they also have to consider, hopefully Gio Reyna remains healthy, you know, but what do you do if you don't have a Gio Reyna available? Because I don't think we'd be talking about the same things if he hadn't have played in those games, right? It really was a remarkable impact from a single player on a team.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's just watching these guys at their club teams and just really hoping they continue to have, you know, good seasons and finish strong. For someone like Gio, hopefully he can get some more minutes at Forest and set himself up for maybe a move this summer, which I think he's of course the loan's going to be ending. I know he's set to go back to Dortmund, but my sense is that he wants to find, you know, a more permanent deal this summer. And then, you know, just the team wise, you know, a lot of these teams in the different top five leagues in Europe are competing for Champions League spots, you know, and we want as many Americans playing in the Champions League, next year. It looks like, you know, AC Milan, Juventus, PSV are all, you know, pretty much set, you know, but AS Monaco, we want them to like finish, you know, I think it's top three in Ligue 1, so they can qualify. So yeah, keeping everybody healthy, hoping that all these teams that they're on can qualify for Champions League. I mean, that's what I'm. And then, of course, the striker position that you mentioned. Just so curious to see how those guys battle it out this last 3 months of the year and who stays hot and scores goals amongst that group.
I do think you want to bring in a couple younger players. If you look at sort of historically big tournament teams that have done well, they brought in a couple younger players. And whether it's, if you want a U.S. example, it would be 2002 World Cup with, you know, Beasley and Donovan. And I think Bruce Arena said it later that part of the reason they were relatively pretty, you know, quarterfinal success at that tournament was the young guys, they weren't like daunted by anything. You know, there's a balance to a roster that, you know, Berhalter's got a great thing going right now as far as having a, from all accounts, a very cohesive, you know, these guys are close, they're friends, the team spirit is high. Berhalter, I think, has done a good job of kind of making the transition from coaching, you know, kids to coaching seasoned pros so far, knock wood. But you still need to energize it with younger players to keep it a dynamic squad. And just because of that kind of balance seems to be a good formula. So I think, you know, he might want to look to adding, you know, some younger guys. Summer might not be the best opportunity because you get the conflict with the Olympics where you would have those players. But looking a little farther ahead, I think that's kind of, you know, what you're going to want at the World Cup in 2026.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for being on the show. I will make sure and put links in the show notes to your X account, which is at Mike Wojtala, and also to your work at Soccer America. Before I let you go, any final thoughts you'd like to share?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. It's really fun to talk about it afterwards because, you know, during the game, you're kind of like super focused on everything. And I'll just go back to the fact that they played a home game with 80-90% of the crowd cheering against them, which we'll see when they return to Dallas, to Copa America or so, whether, that was a little bit discouraging. And it hasn't always been that case. We've had unbelievably good crowds. And the U.S. fans that went there were awesome. You know, you just like to see a little, I'd like to see the U.S. play Mexico with more of a U.S. Support. That'd be great.
Thank you, Mike. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Here and Abroad. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with a fellow USMNT fan. I'm Frank Garza. You can follow me on X at Frank Garza 007. And I'll be back next week with a new episode.